Hey, everybody, welcome to Fatso Radio, episode number 96. My pleasure to come to you every Friday night. My name is Carlo Volpe, and thank you for tuning in to Fatso Radio. This episode of Fatso Radio is brought to you by Volpe Martial Arts. This episode and every episode is brought to you by Volpe Martial Arts. KW's Kitchener-Waterloo's hottest, newest Kung Fu and Hapkido studio. My brother, Sifu Adam, brings you his lifelong passion and excitement right to your door. Check it out, VolpeMartialArts.com. All right, folks, I get into type 2 diabetes tonight. I talked type 1 diabetes a little bit, but really more type 2 diabetes. What can we do about it? It's so common. More common than you know. Ask around. Listen what you can do. I love you all. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for your love. Thanks for the comments. Peace. Lily, take it away.
Fatso, the really great podcast show.
Fatso, our very first podcast show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Fatso Radio. How you doing? It's my name is Carlo Volpe, and it's my pleasure to come to you each and every Friday night, folks. And today is no different. Episode 95. No, not episode 95, episode number 96. Welcome to Fatso Radio. Again, my name is Carlo Volpe. I come to you each and every Friday. I've been doing this for over a year now. If you don't know my story, here it is in a nutshell. I created this podcast to tell everybody and share with the world the benefits of turning to fat for fuel, turning to animal sources of fat for fuel, animal sources of protein and meat for fuel. Why? Why is it a big deal? Why am I turning to fat for fuel? Because I'm following a ketogenic diet, and now even more so, I'm following more of a carnivorous diet. And the reason for that is because if you lower the amount of carbohydrates in your diet dramatically, especially if you lower them dramatically, you force your body to burn fat for fuel. I found a wealth of benefits from turning to fat for fuel. Not only did I lose 120 pounds, and I'm always still battling with the weight loss, but I have a much better position than I was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But not only with the weight loss, but With ketogenic diets, they've been showing to help with fighting cancer, if I can get that out straight, but a host of other things as well. So this is the podcast dedicated to telling you my story, my perspective, my ideas, my suggestions, my opinions. Again, not medical advice, folks, just advice coming from the heart, coming from something that I've experienced or many things that I've experienced. Whether it's talking to people that are in the space, whether it's doctors or butchers or farmers, people from every end of the spectrum, all people that are talking about and that are concerned about our health, right? Tonight, no different, folks. I want to talk about type 2 diabetes. Now, I've talked about this in the past. I talked about blood sugar in the past. I'm always going to talk about it. I'm probably not always, but I'm often going to talk about blood sugar and refer back to the blood sugar, because when you're talking about a ketogenic diet or when you're talking about a diet that is not necessarily just focused around being low carbohydrate, that is taking advantage of the benefits of a low carbohydrate, right? Or of eating low carbohydrates, then it's impossible to not talk about blood sugar. Carbohydrate is sugar. When you eat sugar, it affects your blood, right? That's how we measure sugar in our system. We measure it with our blood. It's the easiest way to measure someone's glucose level. And why is it important? I want to get right into that, right? Why is it important? Because it's important for us, for every human being and for other animals as well, of course, but for us, for humans, it's very important to keep our blood sugar, our glucose levels in our blood, right? There's many things in our blood. It's not just this red stuff, right? There's water, there's salt, there's minerals, there's vitamins, there's fat, there's glucose in our blood. And our glucose in our blood has to be within a certain range, right? So I'm going to read some statistics here, or some general guidelines or some general information that's non-controversial, but it's basically just from the Mayo Clinic, right? So according to the Mayo Clinic, blood sugar of less than 140 is preferred, is normal rather, right? So that's 140 milligrams per deciliter. And for you, if you're in the US and other places in the world, you might use that number, right? Milligrams per deciliter, or you might use millimolars per liter. So if you're using millimolars per liter, you're looking at around 7.8 is normal, or anywhere around 7.5, 7.6, anything below that is considered normal. So again, 140, if you're on one scale, the imperial scale, not imperial, it's metric, but if you're in the other scale, the ones that the Canadians use, and I think other countries as well, but millimolars, you're looking at below 7.8. If you're looking at milligrams per deciliter of glucose, you're looking at below 140, right? So that's considered normal. But then if you go over 200, it's considered, you know, diabetes. So it's not just cut and dry, because we fluctuate between that, you know, throughout the day. We fluctuate depending on what we eat. And that's the bottom line for me, right? The bottom line for me is what we eat. There's other things as well that affect our blood sugar. And a lot of people don't realize that, but things like stress, lack of sleep. In fact, lack of sleep can basically put you in a state of pre-diabetes or insulin resistance the next day. So I want to get into that. But before we get into that even, what's the big idea with blood sugar, right? Why is blood sugar so important? Well, quite frankly, if your blood sugar is too high, if the glucose levels in your blood are too high, you will die. It's toxic to your system. So I've talked about this in the past, right? But it's very important for our body to be able to take this glucose that's in our blood and put and do something with it, right? It can do a few things with it. And it, miraculously, our bodies are very, 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 very advanced, obviously, right? And very specifically evolved to handle this. So what do we do with blood sugar? When our blood sugar rises high, right? It rises high by a couple of different levels. Let's just talk about nutrition. When we eat food that has high carbohydrates or just carbohydrates at all, it will raise our blood sugar. If you have a meal that has a high carbohydrate load, it will raise your blood sugar more than if you have a meal that's less carbohydrates. Of course, makes sense. If you have an apple, it'll raise your blood sugar a certain amount. But if you have a bag of candy or a potato or a bowl of pasta or a steak, it'll raise your blood sugar much differently depending on the food you eat, right? Okay. So what's type 2 diabetes? What's diabetes at all? Diabetes, again, for a reminder for everybody, I'm not a doctor, but it's very easy to find this information, but I'm trying to present it to you in a way that at least I understand, right? So diabetes is a condition where your body can't regulate your blood sugar very well anymore. That's the bottom line for me. There's a couple different conditions, right? There's a type 2 diabetes or type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, generally speaking, is considered an autoimmune issue, an autoimmune condition that it's really, we don't really know maybe the origins of it, but for the most part, type 1 diabetics either don't produce insulin, right? Their pancreas doesn't produce insulin or doesn't produce enough insulin to be effective. And why does insulin matter? Because insulin is a hormone that lowers your blood sugar, right? A hormone is a messenger, right? So what does it do? A hormone being a messenger, it gets put into your bloodstream by your pancreas, right? The organ that is responsible for producing this insulin, produced by the beta cells in the pancreas, if you want to get technical. But your pancreas produces this insulin, pushes it through your body, runs it through your bloodstream in order to take all that sugar and use it effectively, right? A couple different things you can do with that sugar, that glucose, right? It can put it to your muscles, right? Redirect it to your muscles if you've used the muscle glycogen. So if you've exercised and you've used the sugar, basically the sugar in your muscles through a glycolytic exercise. So glycolytic means if there's an activity that's going to burn glycogen, right? Or burn sugar. So it's muscle sugar. It's sugar that's in our blood, or it's in our muscle rather. So if you do an exercise that is glycolytic, so if that will burn lactic acid or that requires glucose essentially or glycogen to burn, think of it as something that's more explosive or something that's kind of like a sprint or something that's something that needs explosive or powerful movements, right? Something fast even. A lot of times that requires glycolytic or glycogen. So, but if you didn't just exercise and your muscles aren't depleted of all that glycogen, right, then it's not going to go to your muscles. Also, if you haven't fasted in a while or if you have glucose on a regular basis, your liver will also have all the glycogen it needs, because your liver is another storage place for glycogen, right? So again, if your muscles don't need it because you haven't exercised and your liver doesn't need it because you haven't fasted, right? Then where's it going to go? It's going to be pushed into your fat cells. And that's how we gain weight. That's literally how we gain weight. But what's diabetes? Diabetes is not about gaining weight, right? It's about the inability to maintain that blood sugar just by your diet anymore. Right. Or not only that, even to uncover it or unwrap it even more with type 2 diabetes, it's the inability to maintain your blood sugar with what you're currently doing. Let's just say that, right? Because, and the reason why I say that specifically like that is because type 2 diabetes is reversible, right? You can change the condition so you no longer have type 2 diabetes. So let's get into that. Type 1 diabetes, again, for the most part, it's considered an autoimmune issue where your body doesn't produce or can't produce or doesn't produce enough insulin. For a lot of those patients, you can take exogenous insulin, right? So insulin is in a shot. For a lot of those patients, completely fine. And for most people, right? Most type 1 diabetics, it's completely manageable. It's been around for a while. Some type 1 diabetics are actually seeing a lot of benefits from eating a low carbohydrate diet, right? And for some diabetics, that may sound really, really scary because there's the idea of ketoacidosis. And I understand that. It's a real, real concern, a real threat, real risk. So if you're type 1 diabetes, a diabetic, look into that and make sure you have all the information you need to have it. But for type 2 diabetics, ketoacidosis is really not a major concern. But back to that again, you can control your blood sugar, of course, by the sugar you eat in your diet, right? So for type 1 diabetics, again, if you're not producing insulin, you're going to need insulin. It's going to be, of course, a little trickier because you don't want your ketone levels too high. There's a very intricate balance that you need to maintain, you need to look into. An endocrinologist will help you with that. But an endocrinologist that knows ketosis is going to be amazing. That if you could find one, let me know. Send me the message. Again, great time to remind everybody, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a professional in health. I'm a professional in giving personal advice, right? I've tried every diet. I've done everything. Email me, fatsoradio@gmail.com with your questions, concerns, doctors that want to come on, endocrinologists, I'd love to talk to you. But let's get back to diabetes. Type 2 diabetes, right? Different from type 1 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is a state of disease or a health condition where your body is producing less insulin for some people, right? Less insulin than it needs, or the insulin it's producing is just not effective anymore, not as effective as it was before, right? And the state, the metabolic state or the medical state that's referring to is considered insulin resistance, right? So what is insulin resistance? We talked about insulin for a second briefly earlier, but insulin essentially is the hormone that your body produces, right? Your pancreas produces this insulin in order to combat or bring down the blood sugar, right? One of the things that it does, right? So if you can't produce, if your body is insulin resistant, what happened? How do you become insulin resistant, right? So if your body is bathed essentially in insulin over time, or your blood sugar, you have so much insulin in your body all the time. One of the theories at least is that if you are surrounded by so much insulin all the time, your insulin levels are high, chronically high, effectively over time, the muscle cells that retain that glucose, right? The muscle cells that activate upon insulin, right? And then what they do, or not just the muscle cells, but any cells in the body that are activated by insulin to take up that glucose, if insulin is less effective over time and you become insulin resistant, that means you need more insulin to do the same job as it did before. What does that mean? That's very dangerous, right? And it's not only is it dangerous, but it's problematic, right? It's problematic because high levels of insulin are not favorable. We don't want high levels of insulin. We certainly don't want chronic high levels of insulin. Insulin is very useful, right? Certain times we're building muscle, we're growing, you're growing a baby, you're growing muscle yourself. We're just growing as a child or growing as a human. Insulin is very important. It's also very important for other things too. It modulates your sleep. It's very important. So it's not like we don't want insulin, but we don't want a high insulin level. And that's the bottom line. Type 2 diabetes, like I said, insulin resistant. So now the insulin that your body does produce, if it still produces insulin, which most people still do if they're type 2 diabetics, that insulin now is less effective. So you actually need more insulin, right? So your body it's taxing on your pancreas to now produce higher levels of insulin. And the reason why, and I want to get down to this, the reason why your body has to produce higher levels of insulin over time, chronically, right? Which means consistently over time on a regular basis, a repeatable offense, if we can say, the reason why is because we're having chronic high levels of high blood sugar. So what can cause high blood sugar, right? High blood sugar can be caused by stress, but the major reason is your diet. If you're eating high carbohydrate foods all the time, chronically, right? Over time, consistently over time, then this can happen. It doesn't happen to everybody, but it does happen. And in fact, this is the one way that the body kind of tells us that there's something wrong. In other people, it may manifest different ways, may manifest as of different illnesses. So this is one way, right? When your body, your pancreas just can't produce the insulin as it did before, or the insulin that's producing can't keep up with the demand, or it's not as effective, right? These are all these conditions that happen. So what happens? Your insulin level or your blood sugar level then rises, right? Your blood sugar level then rises chronically. So when you eat something, when you eat some carbohydrates, you eat food that has carbohydrates, sugar, right? Pastas, grains, even fruits or vegetables, anything that has glucose in it, your blood sugar is going to rise, but it's going to lower again in a couple hours later, sometimes 3-4 hours later, right? But if it doesn't lower again and it stays chronically high, that's a sign of insulin resistance, right? There's much more complication or much more details that go into that. And it's much more integral as far as, you know, what qualifies, of course, of insulin resistance or a diabetic, but it's a common thing. And this is what I want to get to. It's a common thing. I'm hearing about it all the time. It's not just with people with weight issues, right? But it's, of course, it comes with people with weight issues. You can be a type 2 diabetic and not even considered overweight. You can be a type 2 diabetic and overweight, morbidly overweight, or obese, like I was. And I technically, I think I'm still obese on the obese line. I kind of have fun with it right now because I'm overweight and obese. I don't know what the difference is, but it's about 1 pound difference or one BMI point. But anyway, it's something that can be changed with diet. And that's what I want to get into, right? That's what I want to talk about the most here, because it's something that it's I don't want to say it's sad, but it's hard to hear, right? It's hard to hear that type 2 diabetes is becoming so popular that it's like a lot of people consider the number one threat or number two threat in healthcare, right? And the other thing with type 2 diabetes is that how we kind of look at it has changed, right? I hate to say this, but we've accepted it. We've accepted it, and it's become more normal. It's become more prevalent. It's become more common, to the point where it's not called adult onset diabetes anymore. It really isn't. I mean, officially it was never called adult onset diabetes, I'm sure, but it was really referred to as adult onset diabetes. I know many people over the years that called to that, doctors, physicians, you know, healthcare professionals. And there's a very simple reason why people refer to it as adult onset diabetes is because it used to really only happen to adults, right? Or old age diabetes, a lot of people used to call it. And quite honestly, it really used to only happen. It seemed like it only happened to adults and old people, you know, the older, the more common that it became. And it really seemed like something's funny. I was talking to one of my buddies, Rich, the other day, and we were talking about just blood sugar in general and all that stuff. And we kind of came to the same funny conclusion, not funny conclusion, but the conclusion that we thought diabetes was something that just old people got because they eat too many sweets. And it was just such a rare thing, but you got it when you were older. That's not the case, folks. And I'm hearing about it on a daily basis, 30s, 40s, and 50s. Like, that's a very common age. I mean, the majority of people are listening and watching to my show. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And that's my demographic, right? 30s, 40s, 50s. Men and women split. I got an even split. 50% women, 50% men listening and watching. And this should speak to everybody who's listening and watching, because it's one of the biggest, I think it's probably the biggest health concern out there right now. It's bigger than cancer. I think it drives cancer. I think it has roots in cancer. It has roots in all other autoimmune issues, right? It's insulin resistance. I remember I had Danielle Hamilton, one of my guests a few podcasts back. He was talking about that, insulin resistance. It's essentially manifests itself differently in the body. When it manifests itself in the ovaries, it's PCOS. When it manifests itself in the brain, it appears as Alzheimer's. There's many different forms of it, but essentially it's insulin resistant. It's a crisis of fuel, a deficiency or a lack of fuel. It really is, right? It's when your cells in your body can't use the glucose like it used to. Insulin is no longer effective. And remember, if insulin is no longer effective, does that mean that insulin is something wrong with insulin? No, there's nothing wrong with insulin, right? Insulin is very simple. It's just a messenger. It takes something and it transports it, right? It shuttles it. And if it can't shuttle it anymore, that means your cells are no longer receptive. You're no longer sensitive to insulin. So if you're no longer insulin sensitive, then you need more insulin, right? So what we've been doing for a long time, and we still do this every single day, is if someone can't produce enough insulin, or if the insulin they produce is not effective, we would give them more, right? Sometimes we don't give them more. Sometimes we tell, or health professionals tell you to watch your diet, try a limited amount of fat, which blows my mind. Blows my mind. When the doctor tells you to watch your fat intake because you have high sugar, yes, go see a new doctor. Yep, you really should. It's common. I know a lot of doctors that have said that over the years. Over the years, they've said that. But you need to question the science. You need to question it's not even the science. You need to question the logic behind that. This is a disease. This is a illness where we have a problem regulating blood sugar, right? Managing that blood sugar. So what are you going to do? You're not going to point that fat as the enemy. We're going to point that sugar as the enemy. This is the time where we fix things. This is the time where we course correct, right, folks? So again, we've been giving people insulin. We've been telling them to eat smaller meals more often, right? Which gives you less time to fast. Remember, if you remember a couple minutes ago, I was speaking about when you fast, you actually deplete the glycogen in your liver, right? That's ideal. That's actually what you want to do when you're sleeping. It's part of your maintenance. It's part of your detoxification. It's part of the housekeeping that your body goes through, right? It needs that. It needs the glycogen in your liver, and is producing cholesterol. It needs all these things to actually do a lot of housekeeping, right? So, but if you're not fasting, if you fast that night because you're sleeping 8 hours, 6 hours, but if you're sleeping 3 or 4 hours and you're having a snack before bed, you might not even waken up fasted, right? Your blood sugar may be elevated in the morning, right? So if you're not effectively fasting well at night, and then you're not fasting during the day and you're eating many meals a day, how are you ever going to expel that or use up that glycogen in your liver? And if you're never going to use up that glycogen in your liver, then you're never going to be, you're never going to be effectively using, you know, the other, your, the sugar, or you're not going to be able, you're not going to have a great spot to put that sugar if you're not using up that glycogen, right? And it's not a matter of just working out hard, and because you can get the glycogen out of your muscles, and you can even get the glycogen out of your liver, but if you're not ketogenically adapted, and if you're not adapted to burning fat for fuel predominantly, how are you gonna do that without sugar? That's the thing. That's the thing about fasting and people skipping meals, people wanna go on water fast or any kind of fast, whether it's 1 day or 2 days or 3 days. There's an element of ketosis that is absolutely essential, I think, in fasting. For me anyway, is that ketosis prepares your body to fast. Ketosis keeps your body in the same natural state of fasting as when you're sleeping and when you're eating, right? A fat meal or a protein meal. But if you're gonna eat a high carbohydrate diet and then try and fast 8 hours and eat another high carbohydrate diet, another fast, another 16 hours, like, you can do it. I'm sure you can do anything if you put your mind to it, but I think it's very, very difficult. So back to type 2 diabetes. We used to call it type 2 diabetes. We used to call it adult onset diabetes, right? And it's no longer the case. Children are getting out. Our children are developing this condition. So if children are developing this condition, it's no longer an adult issue. It's an issue of basically assaulting our pancreas, right? Assaulting our pancreas or taxing our pancreas so much with the foods we're eating and even just stresses we're eating, right? The other thing I want to talk about is that it's obvious, of course, because I'm mentioning it now, but this is preventable. If you've been following along, which I'm sure you are, thank you so much. This is preventable. This is something that we caused as a society, as a person, I can cause it, as a person, you can cause it. But again, it's no blame. I just want to point out this very quickly, that it is preventable, right? And the next logical thing to say after that, or the next logical thing to ask after that is that it's preventable, is that it's reversible, right? So that's my last thing I want to talk about. It is reversible. And how do we do it, folks? We do it by doing what I've been saying and what I've been suggesting, not advising, of course, but what I've been talking about, right? What I've been talking about with the low carbohydrate diet, with the carnivore diet, even many aspects to this, right? To whether it's, you know, get a hold of the whole blood sugar idea, or whether it's really just to flip the switch completely and go ketogenic to see the benefits of ketosis, even to go carnivore, to see the benefits of a carnivore diet. Because I know this is fringe, and I know this is still not super common, not mainstream, but ketosis is, it's not questionable. It's not even, in my mind, it's not questionable that this is a natural state, because it's very easy to imagine us living like this. Think of this. If I eat meat once a day and some salt and some water, and I eat once a day, is it hard to imagine us doing that, eating meat once a day for the beginning of time, as long as we've been eating meat? No, it's not hard to imagine we've had access to meat once a day. Not only that, it doesn't have to be fresh meat, right? I can eat cured meat once a day. I can eat fermented milk, cheese, right, once a day, or whatever, it's 2 days or whatever it is. So one of the reasons why I think it makes so much sense is that because it seems very natural. So how do we do it? How do we reverse type 2 diabetes? And I want anybody listening to this, anybody watching this, whether you know me or not, send me a message. Send me an email, fatsoradio@gmail.com. Hit me up on Facebook. Send a message in the Facebook page or Twitter. I don't use Twitter much, but just email me, fatsoradio@gmail.com. And let me know your story. Let me know. I want to coach you. I want to help you along this, because I have a couple of buddies now that have been chatting with me. It's amazing. It's amazing where this is going. A couple of years ago, I had friends say, hey, Carl, I want to lose some weight. Help me with that. Awesome. I helped them along the way. I'm still helping them along the way. It's a journey, right? It takes many, many years to get it right. And it takes many years to keep it right. Now I'm getting things like, hey man, I just got told I'm type 2 diabetic. I get it. I completely get it. And you know what? There's light at the end of the tunnel. Type 2 diabetes. If you found out right now, today, if you're walking, you're running, you're sitting on your ass, whatever you're doing right now, and you just found out today that you have type 2 diabetes, just think of yourself as lucky, because now you know. Now you know what you can do. Now you know what you can do. Now you know at least one thing to attack, right? And it's the glucose manageability, your glucose levels, your blood sugar level. If you can manage that, and you can manage it. And ketosis and the carnivore diet are ways to help with that. It's funny, because a carnivore diet is not always in ketosis. Your blood sugar is not always super, super low, and your ketones are not always high. So it's something that, it's not great for people who love, I'm not saying it's not great, but it's the benefits of going carnivore is not that you get to test every metric and everything. The benefits of going carnivore, not only because you feel great, but is that it's so simple. Eat some meat, and that's it, right? But when you're in ketosis, a lot of people that are following ketosis like to measure things, and that's great. You can follow ketosis and measure everything, or you can follow ketosis and measure nothing. and just use your brain, right? Greens and meat, you're probably safe. I did that for a couple of years. I lost almost 100 pounds doing that, right? So it becomes very natural. If we start thinking in that, if we maintain that train of thought, if we keep on banging that drum or reminding ourselves, what's natural? What's natural? Hunt an animal, kill an animal, eat that animal, forage some food, sure. Pick some berries when they're in season, pick some fruit when it's in season. Vegetables were very, very, I would say non-existent even, right? To think about, how would you know which vegetables to eat? We took us thousands of years of cultivating and fine tuning and taking a couple plants and really, you know, I won't get into all the vegetables we eat, but the bottom line is you can eat any single animal on the planet almost, right? Within reason, even the animals that are dangerous, you have to be careful. You can cut out certain organs and things like that. Don't eat polar bear liver. But you can really eat. And as I was talking to my buddy Rich about this, Rich, shout out. I hope you're listening to this, buddy, Richie Gaunt. But it's like, it's amazing. We can eat any single animal almost. I haven't heard of an animal we can't eat yet. But we can eat every single animal on Earth, insects included, fish, birds, and all that stuff. And the idea that we even need to go to plants kind of seems silly to me once you think about it. It's a given, right? It's something I've always accepted. I've always understood because you didn't even question it. Well, oh my God, we eat tons of plants. Why do we got to kill animals? Okay, it's easy to say that. It's easy to understand that because it's very simple to take a black or white, one or zero approach to it, right? Don't kill a cow if I can eat something else. Sure, that may sound simple at the level, right? But it's not because you're killing something else still. So what you kill matters. It's not if you're going to kill something, it's what you're going to kill and how you're going to kill it. So again, how do we get back to this? How do we get back to a state where type 2 diabetes is gone? How do we get rid of it? Well, it's going to take some time, excuse me, but it can happen. And it does happen. It happens every day. Dr. Ken Berry, Dr. Adam Nally, Dr. Sean Baker, Dr. Paul Saladino, many, many doctors out there, many more, Rob Wolf, so many other professionals out there giving Dr. Fung. I got to try and get Dr. Fung on here. Jason Fung out of Toronto, shout out Dr. Fung. There's many resources to do this and really to get this, right? But it starts with lowering the carbohydrates. It starts with lowering the sugar. It makes sense, but how do we do it? The way you're gonna get around eating food that's bad for you, two ways, in my opinion. First, the food that's good for you and the food that you wanna eat to help you heal, make that the best damn food you're gonna eat and make it the best food and enjoy it. What I mean by that, what do I mean? Carlo, what do you mean by that? You're going to eat steak, right? Have a steak. Enjoy that steak. Pray to any God you pray to. Be thankful to that cow, to that sheep, to that lamb, to that pig, to whatever it is, and be grateful and eat with graciousness, I guess, right? And thankfulness. That's the idea. And do that. You can do that now. You don't have to have sugar. Don't have to have barbecue sauce on your steak. Have a steak, salt and pepper, 5 minutes each side or less or more, however you like it. Don't go more than 10 minutes. I'll come get you. But honestly, have a steak, have some chicken wings, have a pork roast, have a beef roast. All of these things are natural foods. Why? A roast comprises of protein and fat. A chicken comprises of protein and fat, amino acids and everything wonderful in there. These are things that are not going to raise your blood sugar. These are things that are not going to make you type 2 diabetic. But these are things that are going to bring you back. These are the things that are going to help you. Lamb chops, sausage, whatever it is, folks, fish, meat, amazing foods. And it's not like, I hope you see this and you think, this guy is not a brain scientist, but it's very clear, right? It's very clear. If you don't eat carbohydrates in your diet, especially if you don't eat a lot, right? You're not going to have a blood sugar issue. Just the bottom line. I'm not saying it's easy. I'll never say it's easy. So please don't yell at me and say, oh my God, you think it's so easy? Just stop eating sugar. It's going to fix diabetes. It's simple. It's not easy. It's just as difficult for someone like me to give up sugar and to stay away from sugar. If I wasn't diabetic or if I was diabetic, I know diabetics that don't even have a sweet tooth. I did have a sweet tooth. I do have a sweet tooth. I had a pasta tooth. I have a potato tooth. I have a potato butt, more like it. But you get what I'm saying, folks. It's not diabetes necessarily that's going to make you have a sugar sweet tooth. It's funny because there's diabetics out there that don't even love sugar. There's diabetics out there that aren't overweight. There's diabetics that are thin. So, and there's diabetics that are healthy, That's the other thing too, folks. You can be diabetic, type 1 or type 2, and be healthy. I have friends all over the world, all over Canada, US, type 1 diabetics, type 2 diabetics. These people, my friends, right? They know certain things they can eat, certain things they can't eat, just like everybody else, folks. We're all human. There's certain foods that affects me because I have a condition, whatever that condition is, right? I'm human. I'm going to make mistakes. Not only mistakes, I'm going to make choices. I'm going to make decisions from one day or another to another. That's going to affect how I eat. It's going to affect my psyche again. Like I always say, there's a psychological element to everything we eat. It's not just feeding our body. It's not just feeding our stomach. It's feeding our guts, feeding our brain, feeding our emotions, our ambitions, our drive, our inspiration. It's what it helps us. It helps us get through. It helps us bang that drum to keep on going, right? So how are we going to lower your blood sugar? If your blood sugar is chronically high because of things like stress, but more so than stress, let's be honest, more so than stress for most people, I'm not going to say everybody, but for most people, it's more than stress. For most people, it's their diet. It's a lot of carbohydrates. It's for a lot of people, it's mostly carbohydrates even. And the frustrating thing, and my heart goes out to everybody that's battling, whether it's diabetes or whether it's any sort of food addiction, or even just any sort of nutritional issues you're having. My heart goes out to you because sugar is addicting. It's addictive. It's the most addictive thing that I've ever encountered. More addictive, not as addictive as than love. Love is the best, and love is the most addictive thing, and it should be, righteously so. But sugar, my goodness, sugar is dangerous, and it comes in different forms, and for different people, it's different things, right? For some people, ice cream might be their kryptonite. For some people, it might be pasta. For some people, it might be jujubes or sour keys or gummy worms or gummy bears. Oh my God, if I could eat gummy bears all day long. And that's the thing too, right? There are alternatives. I always talk about, you'll hear me talking often about, don't plan a cheat day, don't have alternatives, don't do those keto sugar-free desserts and all this stuff. Except now, this is when you get the green light from me to make some keto desserts or to have some alternative treats and things like that that don't have sugar. Because we're talking about diabetes, folks. We're talking about something that you can die on anytime you can die from this, right? You don't want to mess with your blood sugar. And the most promising thing to me is that, like I said, over and over again, this is reversible. So how do we do it? On one part of me, I feel like, oh my God, for the last 50 years or so, we've been sitting on this gold mine of information saying that we just have to lower our sugar intake and we can fix diabetes. I get it. But on the other side, we've been told that fat's the enemy. Fat's the enemy, animal fat's the enemy, animal protein is the enemy. It's not. It's not, folks. Again, I'm not giving you dietary advice. I'm giving you personal advice to give it a shot. Makes sense, right? It makes sense. You don't have to be a doctor to understand that lowering the amount of sugar you put in your body is going to lower the amount of sugar in your blood, right? If you disagree with me, write to me at goyourself@gmail.com. Just kidding. Honestly, if you disagree, like, let's have a discussion. If you're putting sugar in your mouth, it's going to raise your blood sugar. The bottom line, folks, the bottom line. If you put less sugar in your mouth, if you put less sugar in your food, in your system through food, it's going to have less of an effect on your blood sugar. It's going to keep your blood sugar lower. What's going to happen if your blood sugar is lower? Not only is it going to keep your insulin level down, it's going to have less of a demand for insulin. So along with reversing your type 2 diabetes, which you lower the sugar, right? You can reverse it over time, right? Maintain it, reverse it over time. You're okay. Your blood sugar maintains at a good level. And you could do that for a long time. You could do that forever. And then that is the goal, right? The goal is to then be able to be more flexible. After a while, some people find a benefit. Some people see a benefit after 6 months or even a year of doing this, and it can actually have some carbohydrates, or after maybe a couple of years of this, they can see some kind of repair, but that's a long road, right? But it's still a better prognosis than to think that you're going to have type 2 diabetes for the rest of your life, right? Think about that. Type 2, when you're presented with the idea of type 2 diabetes, or any diabetes, of course, but I'm specifically talking about type 2 diabetes because it's estimated about 95% of all diabetic cases in the US and Canada, relatively, are type 2 diabetics, right? So it's a very small number of people that are type 1 diabetics. So I want to talk about that. So again, how do you do it? You lower the amount of sugar in your diet, and you can do it. You can reverse that. You can reverse that state. You're going to lose weight as well, right? You're going to lose weight because your insulin is no longer high. Your insulin is no longer high all the time because your sugar is not high all the time. So the benefits of that, you're going to see the benefits. You're going to have weight loss. You're going to have possibly weight loss, possibly cognitive benefits, right? When I removed gluten, when I lowered the amount of sugar in my diet, I felt smarter. I actually felt smarter. Things started making more sense. So you may see that benefit. You may get the benefit. But again, how do we do it, folks? Back to the basics. Back to the basics. Forget what we were told about having 5 or 6 meals a day. I don't think you should do that. Whether you're diabetic or not. Disagree with me? I don't know. I'm not a doctor, again. But I don't think you should do that because you shouldn't be feeding an engine that is essentially overworked, right? And it's an engine that's overworked with the wrong fuel, right? And I want you to understand why I feel like that. I feel like it's an engine that's overworked. Your body is an engine, right? Like an engine. Your metabolism is overworked. Your pancreas is overworked. So here's your engine that's overworked. Your pancreas is overworked, pumping out this insulin because you've always had a high glucose level. Give your pancreas a break. Give it a rest. Folks, I love sugar as much as anybody else. Let me take that back. I don't love sugar. I have the same draw to sugar and to sweet food that most people have, right? Not everybody has that. And if you don't, you're lucky. My goodness. But I have that same draw that most people have. So I get it. I get it. Rely on the food that is natural. That's just there too. I mean, you can paint anything with any brush you want. You can use these halo words. You can use these healthy words to say it's all natural, whatever. There's no getting around the idea that if something walks on four legs or flies or swims, that's a natural creature in this environment. That's natural food. That is more acceptable as not, that's always going to be pictured as more natural than something that's made in the lab. I don't care if it's fake meat or I don't care if it's a soy processed crap that you put in and you make it look like meat. They're both an abomination in my opinion. Honestly, if you take real lab cells and you try and culture it and you try and grow it in a laboratory to produce fake meat, that to me is not natural. And that to me is not right because you're not actually having meat. Maybe one day if they can get it where they can snap their fingers like Star Trek and have a cow appear, sure. But that's not what they're aiming for anyway. And the other approach of having just soy or other kind of proteins, vegetable proteins, pea protein or soy protein is the most popular ones. The idea to make that so full of chemicals and shit and added flavors and everything just to taste like a regular beef or an attempt to taste like regular beef patty that is less nutritious, costs more, and it's just quite frankly just is worse for the environment, kills more animals. There's no benefit of it, right? That's never going to last. It's never going to last at the end of the day, but is it going to make millions of dollars? Yeah, it's going to make billions of dollars. There's always going to be people that are going to buy a bullshit product. Why? We're solving answers here tonight, folks. Why are people doing it? Because we're desperate. We're desperate for answers. Walking around being overweight or in pain or sick or diabetic or with issues or any emotional issues, it's painful and it's drudgery. It's suffering, right? And people are looking for a way out. People are looking for something. They're grasping. They're desperate. And this is why all these diet pills are being sold. This is why all these diet shakes are being sold. This is why all these diet programs and exercise programs and weight loss coaches and all these things. That's why there's a massive, massive market because people are sick and they're tired and they're desperate. So here's a free solution. Go have a steak. Have a steak every day. Have some steak and eggs. Have bacon and eggs. Have chops. Have fish. Have salmon. Have turkey. Have emu. Have whale. I don't think you can eat whale. Sorry. But whatever you can have. Have the animal that's allowed to eat in your area and enjoy it. Again, it's not complicated. Go to talk to your mother. Go talk to your grandmother. It's the same thing. Go talk to your father, your grandfather, your uncles, your aunts. The same thing I always say, folks. This is not, your health is not going to be fixed. Your health conditions, your diabetes or any issues is not going to be fixed from mainstream medicine. It's not going to be fixed from mainstream BS diet solutions. It's not going to be fixed. For the most part, I don't believe it's going to be fixed from the mainstream approach. If it was, the mainstream would be healthy. And the mainstream is not healthy. The mainstream in Canada, United States, and around the world is overweight. The mainstream is borderline obese. I think I heard a figure of 2/3 of Americans are obese. I'm not surprised. And I'm sure it's at least half of Canadians and the rest of the world are obese, or at least the developed world, you know, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard because we're so developed that we've developed our own sicknesses and our diseases of civilization and our illnesses of civilization. And really, it shouldn't be that way, right? Civilization is... you know, groups and families and communities are there to help each other and support each other. And that's what happens. But what happens when government agencies and big business and really just money comes into the mix, and that's where the interests go, right? you know, the Canada Food Guy, the American Food Guy, there's so much money involved in all this, right? And it's hard to send a message though sometimes. It's hard to get the message heard on ears. It's hard to get the message listened to and it gets just heard, right? If there's not a lot of money behind it. But this is my way of doing it. You can lower your blood sugar level. You can lower your glucose level if it's chronically high, whether you have insulin resistance or whether you have full diabetes. If you're borderline diabetic, you have insulin resistance. If you're borderline diabetic, treat that like you're diabetic. You can reverse that. You can reverse it and you will. If you try, you'll do it. Folks, it's not something that, like, I'm not saying you should go and pray to get your diabetes reversed. You can pray for your diabetes to get reversed, or you can go and do it yourself. Pray as well. If you're someone who prays, I'm not going to tell you not to pray, right? Pray for the strength to stay on this diet. Pray for the strength to be confident to recruit your family, recruit your friends, not recruit them because we're trying to build an army, but recruit them for support, recruit them for love, right? I don't talk about this very often, but if you are someone that prays and if you are religious, I think it's wonderful, first of all, right? I don't always understand it. I've been through years where I didn't understand the whole spirituality thing, and I still don't understand it, right? But I'm not in a position to, I'm not going to shit on anybody, first of all. Maybe I did in the past, but I'm not going to do that anymore. And because I understand that I don't understand that much. And I could be completely wrong about everything at any given time, right? So if you are someone who prays, how do I do this? How do I say this? If you are someone who prays, pray for the strength. Pray for the strength to give yourself that talk every morning, to give yourself the encouragement and for that confidence, to look yourself in the mirror and go, I'm going to do this again. I'm going to do this again. Maybe it sucks. Maybe the diet routine that I'm trying, or the diet regimen that I'm trying to follow is so different. Maybe it's so unique and it's such a change from the other diet that, man, it's hard to stay on. I get it. I get it. I get it. I get it. But how hard is it to stay on? And what's the benefit? What's the risk, right? What's the risk of removing all the sugar from your diet and all the crappy food from your diet? What's the risk? Happiness, right? What's the benefit? Happiness, right? There's no risk. I mean, there's going to be a risk of, you might miss some food, you know, and I could talk for hours on that, but there's always that time where you see that cupcake. I wish I had that cupcake. Oh, I'm really craving that cupcake. But you know what? You've had that cupcake before. Tell yourself that into my work. There's my little tip of information. If you're on this diet, if you're on any diet, you're trying to be good. You're trying to follow the straight and narrow path for success because you have a goal and you know where that path is going to take you. Just remember, you've had it all before. And if you haven't had that blueberry cookie, you've had something else similar, or you hadn't had that, whatever the dessert is, you've had something similar. Even if you haven't, just tell yourself you have. Fake it till you make it, right? That's it. Folks, I hope everybody enjoys this podcast. I hope everybody gets something from this podcast, this episode, and every episode. Again, email me, fatsoradio@gmail.com. I would love to have more doctors, more nutritionists, more dietitians, more anybody, massage therapists, physiotherapists, butchers, farmers, you name it, firefighters, policemen, everybody, police persons, everybody. I want everybody on here because this is a diet, not only a diet, sorry. This is a topic and this is an issue that really hits home for everybody, right? It's not, I'm not unique that I had blood sugar concerns, which it turned out I was never diabetic, thankfully, right? But, losing the weight and attacking the low sugar would have taken care of that. But I'm not unique with cancer. Other people have cancer, right? I'm not unique with weight loss. I'm not unique with, because I have painful knees, right? Or joints, you know, issues. I'm not unique because I had head injuries. I was playing football 20 years ago. I had 3 concussions. It's part of my story. It's part of the reason why I'm doing these things, right? It checks off a bunch of boxes. When the question is asked to me of, why do you do this diet? Why do you follow this diet? You know, it's just about weight loss. It's funny, I laugh because I still think when people see me, I'm just kind of going on a tangent here, but I still oftentimes forget that I've lost some weight. I lost quite a bit of weight and I still have many behavioral things about me and some quirks. And I still think many ways like I did when I was 330 pounds, I'll be honest, right? Like it's hard to, we don't change overnight, right? So there's times I think, and I see myself and I'm just sitting there, I'm talking to somebody about a diet or whatever, and I'm talking about the keto diet and why I do it. And a lot of people are like, well, why would you do it? They look at me like with a kind of a funny face, like, why would you do it? But, and I'm not trying to be arrogant in the least bit, because I'm not by any means, you know, someone who I would look at and say that I look fit or anything like that, because I don't even know what the hell that looks like, right? But I laugh because my first thing was, well, for weight loss. And then you know, I, many times, most times people get it because they're like, oh, okay, so you either battling your weight loss or you've had a weight loss, you know, a weight issue in the past, whatever. But sometimes people say, well, you know, I don't get it. And maybe that's a testament of one element of why it works, but there's many other reasons why I do it. And again, honestly, cancer is probably the biggest reason, right? But it's not just cancer. It's to maintain things like blood sugar, it's to prevent things like diabetes. Like, that's the other thing too, I want to kind of close up on maybe, is that, you know, it's common. I'm not judging anybody. I'm not going to shit on you. I'm not going to point fingers, but if you're a type 2 diabetic, or if you're borderline diabetic, or if you have insulin resistance, or if you're, like I said, borderline, have you been told that it's hereditary? Have you been told, or has it been questioned to you, or has it been proposed to you that maybe you have it because it's hereditary? Maybe your dad had it and your mom had it and your grandparents had it. And although there may be some, you know, familial kind of genetic components or some kind of family heritage kind of attachments to it, let's think of what's more likely, right? Habits, dietary habits, food habits. If you can reverse your diabetes, then is it a hereditary thing? Is it a genetic thing? Probably not. If you can reverse something, then how much of a genetic component is involved, right? Does half the population have the ability to become diabetic? Probably more than half the population does. But that's another thing too that we don't really talk about, is that we have some differences between all of us, right? We have some genetic differences between all of us. We come from different parts of the world. We've evolved in different climates and different foods and different elements and you know, dangers and all that stuff. So we're not all exactly the same, but some pretty big principles, especially when it talks about diabetes, or especially when we're talking about sugar, blood sugar levels. So I want to wrap this up, folks. But remember, just because your dad or your mom, your grandmother, your grandfather had diabetes or heart disease or cancer or anything, that doesn't mean you're going to have it. Not only that, it doesn't mean you can't beat it. It doesn't mean you can't get it and then beat it, fight it. Great. Break the circle, break the cycle, whatever you want to call about it. I mean, sure, it's harder than saying, breaking other cycles, sure. But I truly believe that, in the same way that I don't think most cancers are hereditary. I don't think most cancers are that strongly passed down from parents to generation. I think habits are. And I think the same with other ailments as well. I think diabetes is going to be the biggest thing as well, right? Is going to be habits and blood sugar. Well, of course, if the food you eat affects your blood sugar, right? And where do you learn your dietary habits from? Where do you learn how to eat? Where do you learn how to exercise? Where do you learn how to wash yourself? Where do you learn how to cook? Where do you learn everything? You learn at home, right? So it starts at home. But again, we're not shitting on parents. We're giving them the advice. Here's my advice to you. We have the information now. Let's fix ourselves. Let's attack this. Let's fix and prevent this, prevent our kids from going through this as well, right? Type 2 diabetes, folks. My love to everybody who's going through type 1 or type 2 diabetes. Again, I'm not a specialist. I'm not shitting on anybody. I want to help people. I want to let you know that you have a solution. You have a route. You have an option. You have many options. Please don't feel like you're glued to this method or to this chasing the dragon, because I do feel like it's chasing the dragon. And I feel like it's even not fair. It's even less fair for someone who's diabetic, because if you're being told to chase that dragon, again, it's my version, I call it a dragon, but if you're being told to chase that dragon and you're diabetic, I think that would be very hard. I think that would be very hard to do and maintain that. And that's part of the reason for me that I was never able to lose weight on a high carbohydrate diet, even if it's a low calorie diet, because it was too hard for me to maintain. So then what happens is I will then binge and eat something terrible. Boom. I'm pretty sure that happens to a lot of diabetics as well. The other thing is that I want to point out and leave you with this, on the idea that it is reversible, is that it's very common that it's reversible. It's becoming more and more common as time goes on. Google it, or any other search engine you use if you don't want to use Google. Ketogenic diet to reverse diabetes. Carnivore diet to reverse type 2 diabetes. A low carbohydrate diet to reverse type 2 diabetes. Search for this information, folks. The information is out there. Doctors are out there. Doctors are everywhere. If you want to do this and you want to talk to me, I want to talk to you. I want to bring you on this show. I want to talk to you. I want to let you and your neighbors and your brothers and sisters and everybody know that we're all the same. We're all going through the same crap. We all get up in the morning. We all want to feed our families. We all want to take care of our families and ourselves. And we all want to go to bed at night knowing that we did the best we could. Right? And we all want to live to see the next day. We want us to live to see our children, live to see our children's children. This is one way to do it. I love you all. Thank you for tuning in to Fatso Radio. Don't forget to email fatsoradio@gmail.com. I appreciate everybody's love. I appreciate all the likes and the comments and the questions and the shares. Don't forget to subscribe wherever that button is. And then there's a notification ring, I think, that'll notify you every time I put out a new video. Finally, lastly tonight, a big shout out to good old buddy, Joey Spina, Sault Ste. Marie. Joe, you had a good run this week, buddy. You had a competition for, I believe it's Build a Bike with the Orange County Choppers, Paul there. I'm not sure what place you ended up in, buddy, but I did. I hope I shared the word a little bit for you. Joe, I'd love to have you on the podcast. Hit me up, my friend. We'll talk, we'll chat. We'll tell me about your bike shop and what you're into. Again, Fatso Radio is not just about diet. It's not just about losing weight and being healthy. It's about community. So, Fatso. I love you all. Have a great night. Fatso Radio. Bye. Say thank you to everybody. Let's say bye to everybody. Bye. And we'll say thanks for listening. Say thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Fatso Radio, the really great podcast show.
Fatso Radio, the really great podcast show.
So get your butt and get in your chair.
Don't eat your nails and don't pull your hair.
We'll talk about chicken or talk about steak.
We'll talk about fat
for goodness sake. Fatso, the really great podcast show.
Fatso,
a very first podcast show.